Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, you're very welcome along to Tuesday evening's show. Champions League knockout stages return, and it's a nice lineup as well. Barcelona, PSG, Liverpool away to Leipzig. We're going to be joined by Philippe Auclair this hour to discuss. Dan McDonald will be on the football show, as will Nicky Bandini too, talking Serie A. And given the James McLean headlines over the last 24 hours or so, we thought we might try and get an idea of the Irish experience over in England these days. Ardal O'Hanlon and Enda Brady of Sky News are going to join us, give us their experiences, give us their thoughts on the McLean situation. Obviously, McLean is right at the far end of the abuse being levelled at people, but interested to get the lads on. That's at 8 o'clock. Ardal O'Hanlon and Enda Brady. 53106 is the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormack, evening.
How are you, Joe? You well?
Yes, I am. And Dan McDonald, hello.
Hi, Joe. Richie.
So, Dan, I guess we might touch on it on the football show. We have Ardal O'Hanlon and Enda Brady just to give us their thoughts on the McLean situation and how they find day-to-day life over there. I don't suspect they're getting the abuse James McLean is, for obvious reasons. We've talked about this many times over, and McLean is pretty much making the same points in the last day or two that he made about a year ago as well, that nobody is taking much heed of this. I think he was in TalkSport about a year ago making that point.
Yeah, I suppose what's different this time is that his wife, Erin, put out her own statement, and that obviously sort of, you know, shone a further light on it, I guess. And certainly has been picked up, picked up in sort of various mediums. And quite striking to see the statements this time from, you know, the FAI, the PFA. It's, you know, Stoke. It's been leading Sky News bulletins or Sky Sports bulletins, which hasn't always been the case in the past. So it is certainly a sense that it's really sort of struck a chord this time with some people, probably from her perspective, really, as much as anything. I think, you know, a very striking story of watching a game in fear because someone had said they were going to bring a gun to that match, which is a sort of a line that sticks with you. And I suppose this is the thing, really, that, you know, James McLean himself will tell you and has told people that he can handle it. You know, he can handle, you know, people's abuse as much as he sort of, you know, he obviously takes issue with how it's been treated by the authorities. But there's probably more of an awareness of the family behind it. And, you know, while he might be able to sort of shrug some of it off, to be honest, I'm sure if, you know, as a mother of three kids who gets a message about her kids or what might happen to her husband, even if the percentage call is that, of course, is that empty threats and it's keyboard warrior stuff, obviously, you know, how could you not think about the worst case scenario of what people are saying they will do? That I think the line that struck me, I think she something along the lines of, you know, all it takes is one person to mean it, and all of a sudden it has a much more serious tone.
What's jumping out to you, Rich?
It's pretty much that. Like, I remember last night when the story broke, or we put out the story of Erin McLean's comments, and then subsequently it came pretty quickly afterwards, the FAI statement. There are a couple of replies just to Dan's point there, to our story, saying, you know, I know it's only, you know, they are serious threats, but, you know, these people clearly don't mean it, otherwise they would have followed through on it. But like Dan says, like, all it takes is one person to mean it. Like, you can't just keep throwing out threats like that and expect no action to come from them and expect there to be no recourse for your actions in terms of threatening the lives whether you physically intend to do them damage or not. Like, that stuff isn't on. And the social media like that, and you hate to bang the drum, social media to become a cesspit, but in terms of what footballers as a whole face, and then what minorities face, whether it's James McLean being Irish in England, whether it's a player of colour, whether it's, you know, and there aren't too many that have come out, but whether it's a player of a different sexual orientation. Like, the stuff that they have to face on a daily basis, on an hourly basis, I know it's easy to say, oh, they're millionaires, oh, turn it off, oh, don't look at it. They do, they have, and it's deeply affecting. And when it gets to the level that it does for James McLean, and I know Dan says there that he's adept at blocking it out, and even Aaron's statement last night says, you know, James is, you know, used to this, he's dealt with it year in, year. He shouldn't be. He absolutely shouldn't be. He shouldn't be getting bullets sent to him at his home. He shouldn't be having to deal with the fact that somebody's saying that they're going to bring a gun to a Stoke game to shoot him. They shouldn't have to deal with, you know, threats on their kids' lives. And there are those that will say as well that McLean brings it on himself. James McLean has a certain social media profile. I think everybody can agree to that, and it mightn't be to everyone's tastes. Does he deserve to have death threats and threats again made against the family and the safety of his family? No. People need a severe dose of cop on, and the authorities do need to start taking better action against this. I believe that Stoke are already talking to the authorities in the locality about this. But on top of that, social media companies and several managers made the point over the last week, you know, Steve Bruce, Neil Lennon, on and on and on, that there needs to be, you know, factored authentication for people using social media accounts, because the way they are being used is really harmful to a hell of a lot of people's mental health.
Dan, it was quite interesting to see David Myler weigh in on this, and we'll talk to David at some stage here and off the ball about it, I'm sure, but he was talking about how terrible it was and saying, you know, he'd seen it for years and thought it was absolutely despicable the whole time. And McLean previously has, you know, made the point that none of his teammates had ever stood up for him publicly. You know, they would take part in the Black Lives Matter movement, but never really stood up for him. And somebody put that back to David Myler on Twitter, you know, why are you only speaking out now and not when you were playing? You knew this was going on years ago. And in fairness to David Myler, very honestly, he replied, honestly, I was afraid to get involved. I stood by and watched a friend and teammate get abused time after time. And I thought to myself, I don't want that aimed towards me and my family, which I think is how a lot of people would have dealt with the situation. And Myler's just honest enough to say it.
Yeah, I thought that was a very honest admission, all right, to be honest. And it is striking, because it was last year that he did put out that statement, James McLean, referencing other teammates. And I actually, at the time, I'll sort of clarify, you know, from his side of things, is that what he meant to say? You know, is that okay? Just that was the point he was sort of portraying in his post before, you know, it was sort of put out there as a story, you know, and that was a point. You know, he was happy enough that would be a feeling I think he would have, that at times maybe teammates have been silent. And, you know, Myler articulates that and says that, you know, as he said, didn't want the hassle. And I think Kev Coban obviously tweeted something last night about how, I mean, he would have maybe preferred not to have worn the poppy, but a lot of people just went along with it. And I think that is, they're two very honest admissions, and I would say that they're pretty, pretty close to the truth. And while you can't speak for every Irish player, and there's like layers and nuances to the whole thing. I mean, some Irish players would have, you know, English partners, you know, and they might have a slightly different take on certain things. But there is no doubt that at times over the years, it feels like James McLean has been left hanging. And really, like, you know, even I mean, you could argue even by sort of, you know, clubs he's played for. I mean, the FAI, in fairness, have been active in recent years. I'm not sure if that's been 100% over a long period of time that's been the case. But at the same time, you'll have like, you know, Easter Rising commemoration sort of shirts and stuff like that. But I'm not sure if there's always been a full, you know, four square behind James McLean, because I think people have seen like how he has been portrayed for pretty much standing up for what he believes in, and they've decided that's just a lot of hassle. I'd be fairly sure that there'd be players who, given the choice, wouldn't wear the poppy. Now, they are all given the choice, but they obviously don't feel like they are given the choice, because I'd be interested to hear your piece with the lads, you know, with Arlo Hanlon and Enda, just about the Irish new kick. And I couldn't claim to speak about it because I've been there a lot, or used to go there a lot, but it's obviously very different living there, and really being in the sort of community as such. But there is obviously this undercurrent there that comes out sometimes, and that ostensibly on the outside, there's no problem with any Irish players in England until they do something that's, you know, that antagonizes people, at which point there is a certain sort of strand of people that will play the Irish card.
Yeah.
But it's almost like the uppity Irishman here, you know, and like, why don't you just keep your mouth shut like some of the rest of them? Like, there was this nonsense sort of, what was this line that James McLean always used to have to deal with? Well, if you don't like it here, you know, why do you take the Queen's money, and why do you take the sterling, and why don't you go home? Now, of course, you go to Derry, you can also have sterling there. That's part of the history. So not necessarily people are fully on top of the whole thing. But that line has always been there. If you don't like it here, you go home. Which is obviously the entire that's not actually what democracy and free speech and all that is supposed to represent. Like, you can't hold views on the country you live in without necessarily wanting to jump to attention every time you hear the flag. So hear the anthem or stand for the flag or whatever. So, like, it's interesting it's taken this long to get to here. But at the same time, what month are we in now? Oh, actually, it's grand. I've lost all conception of time. It's like February.
Got a good nine months.
Yeah, well, we've still got another 9 months till the next round of it. But, I mean, would any other Irish player do it? I remember one time Shane Long didn't have one on, and it turned out he just changed shirts at half time, and like the second one didn't have it. But even there was almost a demand to search, was that the case? Like, is this what was happening here? And like every year, like, James McLean would be playing, say, Huddersfield away, and the Huddersfield newspaper report would be something like, you know, poppy, person who doesn't wear a poppy is coming here this weekend. Like, it's inflamed. So in terms of the Irish teammates, I think John Walters has spoken about it too, to be fair, and a couple of others have, but will another go as far as to not wear one, and know that there will be no comment passed? Like, I'm sure if they renewed there will be no comment passed, you would see stuff like that happen. But listen, I can, in some respects though, you do see the grief and the abuse and how it's been brought home, and you understand why people steer clear of it too, and why they don't want the hassle, because they don't want to bring that on themselves.
Oh well, when it involves your family as well, and the stress it causes everyone, it's much easier to keep the head down. I'm sure I wouldn't judge anyone for doing that. You know, it's interesting because we were putting this piece together earlier on today, and Ardlo Hanlon, Enda Brady seem like good, interesting guests who've made great careers over in the UK, but I was sort of half thinking, it's hard to equate their experience to McLean. Like, football abuse by its very nature pounces on any potential point of difference, the colour of your hair, your appearance, you know, so Irishness grand, yeah, you know. But to another extent, maybe it just exposes what's in the ether, because I texted a friend who lives over there, moved over there in the last while, and I said, do you, like, we're having Ardlo Hanlon and Enda Brady, I'm not sure if this piece, like, is this the wrong route to go down? Do you experience, what's your sense of being Irish over there? Is it okay? Good? And he was saying, yeah, no, it's great. You know, they love the Irish, but there's certain points where it can just arise very quickly. Like, he said there was some issue last year where a stranger, on hearing his accent in the midst of the whatever was going on, calls him a dumb paddy. You know, it comes up very quickly. It's there. It's hanging around a little bit.
I've heard that.
And maybe there's a degree of, as you said, Dan, with the point you made about, like, if you're Seamus Coleman and you're going along with the flow, it's fine. But as soon as you stick your head up a little bit and don't conform fully, then maybe that's when the anti-Irish sentiment is used. So we'll see what the lads say, by the way. That's live. If you've any questions for them. Enda Brady, Ardlo Hanlon at 8 o'clock. I've no real idea what they're going to say. They could come on and say, look, it's all great, and football is just a weird, strange world, and I'm sure that's part of it too. Let's kick on with the news round. It is, as ever, here in News Talk, with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. And Richie, you're starting with, not surprising, but certainly very bad news from the GAA. I mean, we're talking a lot of money here.
Yeah, we're going from grimmer to grim. The GAA today reported a deficit at national level of 34.1 million euro after 2020 revenue was badly hit by the COVID-19 pandemic. The loss at central level is 27.1 million euro with an additional 7 million euro deficits at county and provincial level. The figure revealed in the association's annual finance report today does not include any potential losses incurred by the clubs themselves. The GAA's revenue fell last year by almost 60% from 73.9 million down to 31.4 million euro. Gate receipts in and around the 3.6 million euro mark this year. They don't expect it to return to pre-pandemic levels, that is their income, until the summer of next year, and that's at the earliest. Games remain on hold due to the level 5 restrictions, but Director General Tom Ryan still believes a county first approach to the split season will be the most manageable.
The thing about the club side of things, I suppose, really that would call for a far more accommodating public health scenario, really, wouldn't it? Because you're talking about hundreds of thousands of people at that stage. Now, I do understand we have a huge responsibility to those people too. So, I mean, the reason that we were going with county first, to be honest about it, was because we really did anticipate that that was the element that was going to be most practical to implement because it was a smaller number of people. And I still think that's probably the case. And I don't foresee that changing in the next, you know, in the next couple of weeks, next few weeks. But there probably will come a time, you know, when we'll have to consider all the options ahead of us and make a call on things. But at the moment, the plans that we announced around about Christmas time or shortly after Christmas time are still the ones, Brian, that we'd like to implement if we can.
I think that's fair enough. Tom Ryan there speaking today. So Champions League, Richie.
Yeah, Liverpool with the ideal chance to turn their season around tonight. Jurgen Klopp's side playing RB Leipzig in the first leg of their Champions League last 16 tie. The game is at the Puskás Arena in Budapest as Liverpool were unable to travel to Germany. The team is in a debut in defence, a European debut. That should be for Ozan Kabak. Liverpool have Alisson in goal, a back four, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Ozan Kabak, Jordan Henderson and Andy Robertson. In midfield then, the trio of Gini Wijnaldum, Curtis Jones and Thiago, and a front three of Sadio Mane, Roberto Firmino and Mo Salah. For Leipzig, former Liverpool keeper Peter Galazzi starts in goal. They've then got a back three of Nordi Mukiele, Dayot Upamecano and Lucas Klosterman, with Tyler Adams and Angelino providing the width. Marcel Sabitzer and Amadou Haidara are in midfield with Danny Olmo and Kevin Campbell in support of Christopher Nkunku. Kickoff is at 8 o'clock and at the same time Barcelona play host to last year's finalists Paris Saint-Germain.
We'll talk to Philippe Auclair with us 7:30. Always a really good guest. He'll give us the lowdown on Pochettino and Barcelona, as well as a few words on the Liverpool game. The abuse James McLean received at the old White Hart Lane a few years ago, sickening. Every time he took the ball, he was abused racially, says one texter. No one deserves that. Sorry, lads, says Brian, but isn't the attitude, if you don't like it, go back to your own country, simply racism? I suppose it is, yeah. And then
it is, yeah.
Another one.
It is. Yeah.
If a player came to the League of Ireland and they were perceived to hold loyalist sympathies, do you think they would be treated any better? Well, I'd say two things to that. As the Ian Wright case showed, we are no better than anyone on this front. We have our own issues for sure. So we can only get so high and mighty about things. And secondly, a vivid memory of my youth is being at an Ireland game, and I know you guys will know the name in a second, but being at an Ireland game, like famously, and a substitute came on and he was booed because he was a Rangers player. And then somehow...
It was the wrong player.
I'm getting to that. And then somehow word came through that this Rangers player wasn't actually a Rangers player. So he was then cheered for the rest of the match. So
it was a similar, yeah, there was a similar instance Peter recently with a preseason.
Go on, Dan. Who was it, Dan?
It was Peter Lovenkrantz, I think, playing for Denmark.
Denmark.
It turned out it was a guy called Peter Madsen who came on. Can I just say though, before we move on from that and that text, we've actually had a couple of instances in the League of Ireland in recent years where Alan Manis, the Shamrock Rovers goalkeeper, didn't stand to attention for the, you know, the way all the players turn for the national anthem. At the Aviva, to turn towards the tricolour. Right. Manis didn't acknowledge it. And also Sammy Morrow, Derry City in recent years as well. And like, there was a bit of a storm over it, but more so like, you know, external social media commentary and stuff. But Alan Manis can speak about it someday, but I don't think he gets abused at every ground he goes to for not you know, for not respecting the flag or something like that. You know, I think he actually stood for it this year as well. Just gone. So there have been instances, you know, where that's been the case.
Yeah.
I'm sure they get chants, you know, shouts and chants and so on, but obviously nothing on a similar scale.
It's not an instant barrier to being accepted at a club or at an opposition ground. Like, that's not the stick to beat them with ordinarily. But there have been instances, as Dan mentioned there. I remember Neil McCann being roundly booed. I remember John Giles made a comment about it when he was on commentary for an Ireland-Scotland friendly at Lansdowne about 20 years ago now at this stage. And even the most stupid one I can remember recently was about, and it's even probably about 6-7 years ago now at this stage, Man City were playing one of these pre-season friendly tournaments at the Aviva, and Vladimir Weiss came off the bench for them. He plays for Slovakia and he had a loan spell at Rangers, and the people that were in the stadium booed Weiss his every touch just because he'd played for Rangers on loan. So we have our own issues here in terms of how we treat players like that.
I was studying professional golf with the PGA in the Belfry, says somebody, in the early 2000s. The lecturers regularly called me Paddy, in brackets, my name is Rob, until I pointed out I was uncomfortable with the term and the coaches couldn't understand why. They thought they were having fun. Yeah, I see, that's probably, I guess, what's perceived as the more playful ribbing of Irish people as opposed to,
you know, what
McLean is on the end of. And maybe we're at a point now where, okay, it's not so funny, come on, stop.
Do you know what though, like, I remember being at a festival in 2004, I was over at Reading in 2004, and, you know, enjoying myself as you would do at a festival. You know, I was over there with a couple of mates, most English, one Irish, and out of nowhere you just hear this "Oi, Paddy," like, really sternly, and nothing will sober you up as quick while you're in a foreign country as somebody saying that in your direction. And it's like a really jarring experience to hear it, because you're suddenly confronted with this, oh Christ, am I not welcome here just because of my accent or where I come from?
And how were you behaving at the time?
Not like me. I was grand.
Yeah, no, it makes sense then. You probably weren't welcome.
He was in a leprechaun costume at the time or something else. some over Irish, like Roy Keane in one of those 7-Up ads back in the day.
Walker's Crisp, Dan, come on.
Walker's Crisp, whatever he was doing. And listen, Keane did it for everyone, you know. Instagram man.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to know what scale to put that on, isn't it? Like, what McLean is getting is obviously very, very serious. And then I guess it's harder to know what that other stuff, where that falls. Like, there was, because I was just trying to look into examples ahead of the chat with Enda Brady and Ardal O'Hanlon later on. And in 2012 on The One Show, like the most inoffensive of shows, really, The One Show, Tea Time on BBC One in 2012. And he did get into
your eventual destination, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, touch wood. Daley Thompson was on, you know, and this was like in the build up to London 2012 excitement. And you know, the way there's like the torchbearers who carry the torch for a certain number of miles and hand it on in the build up to the event. And so they were, you know, Daley Thompson on, great. And they showed a picture of a torchbearer who had got Olympic torchbearer 2012 tattooed, you know, because they were so proud to have carried the torch. And the reason they were showing this was because, oh, you know, classic The One Show. This is funny, isn't it? The spelling was wrong. And, you know, Daley Thompson just in an automatic way goes, oh, must be Irish. Either about the person who got the tattoo or the tattoo artist. But, you know, it was the dumb Paddy trope, really.
And oh,
like,
yeah.
It wasn't a considered point or thought, I think. It was just like an automatic dumb Paddy. You know, it's in the ether, it's in the culture. Now, I don't know, how offended are you by that?
Well, like, yeah, I remember back in, there was a Grand National in 1993. There was a false start. Not the one with the bomb scare years later, but there was a false start Grand National. I remember one of the trainers was interviewed at the time. I don't want to guess which trainer it was. It could be risky. But he said something like, you know, even in a backward country like Ireland, they can get a fault. You know, they can get a race started or stuff. I remember it was a massive storm over, and it was like it's a sort of a cousin of that dumb Irish sort of theme. I think it counts as offensive without being like over the top, you know, and losing your mind over it.
Yeah.
But it's obviously like we've had this debate in the last, you know, sort of 6-12 months, go further back with various forms of discrimination and comments, and what may seem playful in one context, like over a long period of time, is not that. Mm. Sure. How many times, I suppose, do we like, you know, will make flippant comments, but the Brits are at it again about certain things, and, you know, claiming Irish athletes and actors and whatever it might be. And there's a bit of that, but there's obviously grades of it. And like, what the McLean stuff more hints at is a more serious stuff that lingers beneath the surface, and it's always going to come out. And like, the one thing I was going to say as well, I mean, I don't know, maybe is there a different experience for the Irish in London and in various parts compared to, say, you know, some of the more northern industrial places, like, you know, the places where, and I think Kev has spoken about it before, like going to Preston, a lot of his family going to Preston in the 70s at a time when the Troubles was going on, and, you know, and it was affecting England, you know, like there was stuff happening there. And there's probably a different experience, I would say, than, you know, you might know a lot of Irish people living in London now who probably aren't exposed to it in the same way that people were then.
Yeah, well, I've a couple of friends in London. Brother was in London. It's never arisen. Like, I've never even thought to ask them, funny enough. Maybe I'd get a different story if I'd asked them, but they've never mentioned it. We should keep things moving before we get to Philippe Auclair. So Brian O'Driscoll was on with the lads this morning, Rich.
Yeah, the likes of Bundyaki, Ross Byrne, Craig Casey and Ryan Baird have all been released to their provinces. For this week's Pro 14 matches, Ireland head coach Andy Farrell has retained a core training group of 24 as attention turns to the Six Nations clash with Italy. Brian O'Driscoll, as you mentioned, was on this morning, and he says, considering Ireland's lack of depth at out half, one name should be called in from the cold.
It's hard to go back to a player that had difficulty in marshalling his troops in a kind of a low point in Irish rugby, I suppose. And it takes a huge amount of positives to balance the journal. You know, brilliant individual and collective team performances to get yourself back in the reckoning. I guess the reason I call for him is because he probably presents a little bit more from an attacking mindset point of view. He goes to the line quite aggressively. He's very capable of running with the ball himself. I don't think he does it quite as well as Johnny Sexton, but he definitely takes a step. He hits the pass a little bit more than the two boys at the weekend. And I don't know, maybe it's just time to see whether he deserves that second shot at it. And maybe he can be the one to bring us forward over the next year. But it's nervous times with a key position like that when you don't have guys really putting their hand up and looking to take their opportunity.
Yeah, Dan, I don't know how much you saw, but not great defending at times, can't score to save their lives. But enough about the football team. What did you make of the rugby?
Well, I don't want to insult you, Joe, by saying I didn't exactly tune into all the coverage.
Just half time, full time? I hear you. A lot of people do that.
Yeah, no, I got the last 5 minutes, you know. I got the Billy Burns kicking the ball out a couple of weeks ago. Shocking business.
In more serious news, though, Fabien Galthié.
Yeah, he's tested positive for COVID-19. He's asymptomatic and was one of two members of the management team to test positive upon their return from Dublin yesterday. The IRFU thankfully say all members of the Ireland squad and backroom team returned negative PCR tests yesterday. And there'll be a David versus Goliath matchup in the men's semi-finals of the Australian Open tennis. Novak Djokovic will continue his quest for an 18th Grand Slam title against someone who's played only 18 sets of Grand Slam tennis. Djokovic beat Alexander Zverev in straight sets, or four sets, I should say, to set up a meeting with Aslan Karatsev. The Russian qualifier continued his storybook tournament by beating the 18th seed Grigor Dimitrov. Serena Williams has lost just once beyond the quarterfinals in Melbourne. She'll face the 2019 champion Naomi Osaka in the semis following respective straight sets wins today over Simona Halep and Su Wei Tse.
Very good. Osaka Williams should be a good semi-final. It's around now I parachute into coverage of this tournament. Dan, I'll see you back on the football show after 9 o'clock. Richie, thanks as ever. Talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, Paddy.
Champions League action is coming up with Philippe Auclair next.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.